Welcome to American Masters Lennon NYC Beyond Broadcast, our weekly podcast leading up to the November 22nd airing of our new documentary, Lennon NYC. I'm Susan Lacey, creator and executive producer of American Masters, and with me is my dear friend, Michael Epstein, the writer and director of Lennon NYC.
Hi, Susan.
This week's podcast is with Elton John, and since it's so short, we thought we'd take the opportunity to answer the very first questions that's been sent to us. Michael, why don't you tell us how this came about?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we thought of at American Masters for this podcast was to get into process and to give people after they've been listening to the podcast for a while and then after they see the film on November 22nd a chance to write in with some questions, and then you and I'd sit here and throw them back and forth. And since Elton John is so short, because Jessica Levin, who's one of the producers of the documentary along with us and is amazing.
She is amazing.
We have to give our shout out to Jess. Jess did the interview with Elton in San Jose, and he did it just before he went up. He was very generous that he gave us time, but it was a very, very short window. So I think it's only about 10 or 12 minutes. So somebody, Ellen Gradman from Chicago, Illinois, wrote in with a couple of questions, and we thought, since it's such a short podcast, why don't we dip our toe in the emails and we'll give it a shot as somebody's watch goes off. So there we go. Okay, so the first question is
that she asked is, what interviews were you most excited, nervous, or worried about?
Well, the easy one is worried, which is Yoko, because it was a big deal. And, you know, it's Yoko. It's Yoko Ono. And, you know, I've interviewed a lot of different people over the course of my time. I'm sure you have, too. And, you know, you don't always get used to it. You know, there's always a little tension beforehand because you want to make sure it's right. But this one was different because, I have a lot of admiration for Yoko, and I didn't want to offend her, and I didn't want to screw it up, and I didn't want to ask stupid questions. And we did two interviews, and they were great. They were great. I mean, there were a lot of surprises in the interviews. I don't know how you felt, but we were talking earlier about there was some honesty and some kind of, I don't want to say rawness, but there was just these flashes where you just got the, you know, unvarnished truth. And there were things that she talked about that were wholly unexpected for me, like Jerry Rubin's apartment the night that Nixon got reelected.
Things she'd never talked about before.
Certainly not on camera. Right. I mean, I don't think, you know, she'd written about them a little bit, but she had never talked about them on camera ever. So, and that'll be a later podcast. Otherwise I was kind of excited about their stuff. I don't know about, how about yourself?
Well, I can certainly understand, you know, how you felt about Yoko. I mean, she's a very formidable and incredible woman and an artist in her own right. So, but I think what I would have been most nervous about is that you had to go to a very painful place with her. And, I don't think anyone ever gets used to talking about that. So,
yeah, no, I was, we did two interviews with Yoko. She was very kind in granting us two separate interviews so we could kind of cut it over a period of time. And I was very clear to myself the first interview, you know, I'm just not going to go to certain places like John's murder. And we did it at the record, well, not at the record, but we did it at the Hit Factory, the old Hit Factory, which is now Sears Studio on 49th Street. And you'll see it's actually in the control room, which is actually the mixing board that they used for Double Fantasy. And we talked about the death and that night. And she didn't really want to go into it too much, which was fine. You know, I mean, whatever, you know, as you know, you were there. You know, just whatever the parameters were fine for us.
We were all weeping in the background.
Yeah.
I remember that. It was a really extraordinary moment to be talking with Yoko about this, and very painful and unexpectedly moving.
Yeah. You know, she's been great, I have to say. I mean, it's a longer answer to the question, but you get a sense of just how, you know, what it means to be a creative partner with Yoko in a very sort of shadow way. I don't want to put myself or put us at American Masters in sort of the same camp of other creative partners at all, But, you know, it was a little window in to her brilliance and to how she works, and it was great. And the film is dramatically better for Yoko's participation in it. I mean, absolutely. All right, question two. This is to you. Ready? Is there an interview that really surprised you in one way or another?
I don't know that I could say it's one particular interview that surprised me, but I was, in fact, very surprised to learn of the depth of this love story of John and Yoko.
Really?
Yes. I mean, I knew that there was a great love story. Certainly, we all knew that. We see in the images and so forth. But I don't think I was as aware before we started this film of how interlocked they were and how much John needed Yoko. And that really surprised me. That came out of the Lost Weekend section. That I think unless you're a student of John Lennon's life, I can't be the only one who didn't know that he fell apart completely without Yoko.
Of course,
Yoko.
Those are all our listeners in our podcast, all the students in John's life. So.
Well, I didn't know this. I didn't know that he literally fell apart and couldn't be without her and suffered incredibly for that. That was really a surprise to me.
That's good.
And also, when he says, I think it's one of the moments in the film that just grabs me every time. I want to just clutch my heart when he talks about that. And he says,
There
was nobody to love me. Nobody was looking after me. Right. And I just fell apart. And you know, you can't believe that you're hearing this from John Lennon.
Yeah. Now, of course, May was there. You know, and we have May in the film. People have asked, you know, is May in the film? And yes, May Pang is in the film. And she was his companion during that time, but I don't think she quite filled the void. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So
we just touched on it a little bit. The last question, was there a particular story that really touched you in ways you didn't expect?
Well, you know, to that point, very much, exactly. I knew, you know, there's a story about John one night getting very, very violently drunk and holding Jim Keltner down with Jesse Ed Davis, who was the guitar player on some of the Phil Spector stuff. And Jim talked about it in last week's podcast. I was very grateful that Jim talked about it. But in it, he said when he got really, really drunk, he would call Yoko's name. And to me, it's
Scream.
Scream Yoko's name, yeah. Scream or call?
I think he said Scream.
Scream? I don't remember. But anyway, I've only seen the film about 3 million times. But in the film, it really always, it just kills me. It just absolutely kills me.
Yeah, it's a really amazing moment in the film.
Yeah. So,
I actually heard from some people who saw the film this morning at the press screening for the New York Film Festival. And that was one of the things that several people said, at that moment they could barely breathe.
Yeah. Well, that's good to
hear. Yeah, yeah.
Take the oxygen out of it. You know what, and if I can jump back, you know, I was realizing a surprise was, you know, I did a lot of research, but when we interviewed John's immigration attorney, Leon Wiles, and Leon brought the decision to the interview to read it. And, you know, I'd done a lot of research, but I hadn't actually read the formal decision granting John permanent residency in the United States. And in it, you'll see in the film, there is this. The judge basically says that John exemplifies the American dream. And I thought, oh, great. Oh, we weren't wrong for calling the film Lennon NYC. This is like we got, you know, there's that little surprise moment. And people have sort of said, John's not an American. What's he doing with an American Masters? And, you know, the idea was really always that he became a New Yorker and it's a kind of immigrant story. And that it was, you know, that American rock and roll had such a profound influence. It's changed his life, is what he says. So there were these, like, little surprises all along the way. The Charivari story that Jack tells.
Great story.
Those were the surprise. The affirmation, every so often in very small ways, that we were right to have New York City be the lens to examine John's life. So, all right, so how about you, Susan? Was there a particular story that touched you in ways that you didn't expect?
I think we've talked about a couple of those moments already.
You like the silk jacket.
But that the freedom that John felt in this country is kind of wonderfully portrayed in the film. I don't want to give the whole film away here.
That's
the but
well, it just makes them want to come and watch.
There's a great story about the first time he goes into the store.
Well, they've
store.
Heard that. They've got that from Jax.
Oh, they got that already. So you already know that one. Let me think.
Silk pajamas? Didn't you like the
I love the silk pajamas. It's actually a story that that Yoko told us that didn't make it into the film, which I loved a lot, which is that while they were apart, she was trying to move on with her life. She went went out one day, I think, with Paul Simon's first wife, and they
That's
went
right.
shopping, and they went into a store, and she bought some silk pajamas. And
the silk pajamas are in the film.
Yeah, that's in the film. But she also went to see a psychic, and kind of a lark. She, and I think her name is Peggy, went to see the psychic, and they went into this room, and there were like 20 psychics lined up, like, you know, telephone operators. They thought the whole thing was ridiculous, but they did it. And the woman said to her, "You will be married again, you will find a man, and he will be
just as famous.
Just as famous,
as
but, he will be much kinder."
Right.
And she couldn't believe it.
That she thought it was wrong.
She
who's going to be just as famous as John
who's
Lennon?
Who's going to be just as famous? And it turned out, she told us, she said, and when we got back together, I realized that the psychic was right. We got back together. He was just as famous because it was the same guy, and he was much kinder.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great story.
Well, all the more reason to check in when we do the Yoko podcast towards the end. So,
thank you. Thank you, as always. Join us next week when our podcast will feature our interview with Roy Sekela. Roy was the recording engineer on many of John Lennon's albums in the 1970s and more or less ran the record plant, which is the recording facility in New York in the 70s and 80s. And he worked with every artist imaginable, from Bruce Springsteen to Hendrix to David Bowie to Aerosmith. I think it's going to be a great podcast. And don't forget the broadcast of Lennon NYC on November 22nd, 2010. As always, check your local PBS listings. And to learn more, go to pbs.org/AmericanMasters.
So, do you remember when you first met John Lennon?
I met him with a friend of mine called Tony King, who was working for John. And John was out here in L.A. actually making the rock and roll album. It's Phil Spector. It was a crazy time. John was doing a video, and I think Tony was playing the Queen in one of them, dressed as the Queen. So that's when I first met him, and I liked him immediately. And because of Tony's friendship with John and his working relationship with John, I got to meet him more. And loved every minute of it. I mean, I can honestly say every minute that I ever spent with John, I treasure.
And I agree. Was there any bit of like, oh my God, this is John Lennon?
Of course. You kidding me? It was like, but he was so great at putting people at ease for me. He put me at ease straight away because of his humor. It's like the Liverpudlian humor. George was the same. Paul was the same. Ringo's incredibly funny. That Liverpudlian humor just put me at ease so quickly. We just hit it off. You know, I was the big cheese at that time, and John was just enjoying his life and getting on making records. And we had a relationship for about 2 years as far as, you know, seeing each other, hanging out. And it was 2 years that can never be taken away. And I treasure that time together. And he was incredibly kind to me. I mean, he took my parents out to dinner, and we went out to dinner together. He used to take my band to the airport. I mean, he came on stage with us, and I think for the first time in years and years at Madison Square Garden, when Whatever Gets You Through the Night had been the number one record, and it was our deal. If I sang on the record, and played on the record, he would come on stage if it got to number one, and it did. And he came on stage at Madison Square Garden after being physically sick in the toilet beforehand. And came on to the greatest ovation I've ever heard of for anybody in my whole life. It makes me very emotional when I think about it, even though I get goosebumps every time I talk about this. But for 10 minutes, the New Yorker stood up, and, you know, the floor at Madison Square Garden is sprung, and it bounces. And it was, I think he was overwhelmed. I was totally overwhelmed by it. I'd never seen an outpouring of love like that for anybody at that particular time in my life. And we did 3 songs together. Yoko came that night and gave him, I think, a gardenia. Gave him a gardenia. We went afterwards to the Pierre Hotel. And there was, I always remember that because I was sitting with my manager, John Reed, and John and Yoko, and Uri Geller was there, bending spoons and forks, and we're drawing stuff, and it was a really happy, wonderful night. I think it was happy. I don't know. I've never talked to him about it, but I think for him it was a reaffirmation of his right decision to stay in New York, and wow, maybe I should get out here a little bit more, you know? Maybe I should do a little bit more shows, because this was something that was so moving, and it was all about him as a human being and him as a musician. And you know, he'd only done the peace concert in Toronto before that, so I mean, it was a big deal for him to do that.
Now, why did you make this bet with him?
Well, Tony was very much a catalyst in this. Tony King, because we, you know, and he's like, "Come on, if he plays on your record and gets number one, you've got to go on stage." All right. And so he came up to Boston to see the show, and I was at that time wearing things that would make Lady Gaga blush. I think, I mean, a little bikini, a little swimsuit made out of a chocolate box heart and stuff. John's going, "Oh my God, is this what it is now?" But John had really lost touch with sound systems and light shows and whatever. I never went to shows, and so he said yes, and it was, thank God he did, because I have that memory, New York has that memory for people who were there, and it got him back with Yoko.
Now, what was that? Yoko, it was like his,
she came to that show, and that was it. And I'd been hanging out with him and May, and, you know, I didn't know that Yoko was going to be there, and it was a surprise, and whether he invited her, I don't know, but there she was, and that was it. John was back with Yoko, and Sean was born, and it was a wonderful end to that point, to a great love story.
Now, after the two of them got back together, were you in touch with them?
I let them be.
After that?
I went to see them at the apartment, and I enjoyed it, but you know, I'd have let them be. They were just so delirious to be back together again. Mm. It's kind of like, you know, you're so happy, I'm giving you the private space you want, and I didn't really see much of them, no.
Well, John sort of became a dad at that point.
Yeah.
And
it's like, you don't have to be friends by phoning each other up every day. I mean, their friendship to me was the fact that they made me Sean's godfather, and which I'm so touched and so, you know, it was like I had something to do with them coming back together, and it was something I'm so proud of and so happy that that happened for him.
Now, a couple of months before he died, didn't you... in your Central Park concert, didn't you do like a tribute to him, or you sang Imagine? Because there's that footage, there's beautiful concert footage.
Yeah, can't remember.
Do you remember?
Nope. I do so many concerts.
Footage.
Yeah.
From September 1980, and you gave a concert in Central Park, and in fact, David was there, I think.
Really?
Yeah, Geffen. And you.
Oh, is that the one I did with the Donald Duck outfit? And I sang Imagine. Yeah. Well, that was because John lived in Central Park. That's probably why, yeah. And I wanted to do something. I've forgotten. This is good. It's good you bring this up. It's good for me because I don't remember half these things. We did Imagine in our set for quite a while because, you know, John still stays with you even to this day. He's like, there's a wonderful film out in England by a friend of mine called Nowhere Boy by Sam Taylor Wood. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen it?
I haven't yet.
Oh, you will.
It's just at Sundance.
Yoko is so in love with it, and quite rightly so. It's a wonderful story about him, Mimi, and Julia. So, no, he still stays with me. He's just, you know, how can you? He's one of the most incredible people I've ever met, and one of the most vibrant, kindest, funny. I never experienced the nasty side of John Lennon ever. You know, John could turn, and you know, had that ability to turn nasty. And I think all artists do that, but I never did that with me. In fact, we had so much laughter between the two of us in the 2 years that we hung out and made music, and he came and sang on my record. And
what was that experience like with when he asked you to do Whatever Gets You Through
the... It was terrifying. I mean, he'd already done the track, and Jimmy Iovine, who's now head of Interscope Records, was the engineer, or one of the engineers. And I had to play the piano, which wasn't so difficult, but then singing with him. Everyone's got their own way of phrasing stuff, and that was hard. Singing to his phrasing, I did another track as well, I was very nervous. Not about the piano so much because that's what I do, but singing with John was tough. But it was great fun. God, I can't take that away from me. I played on a Bob Dylan record and I sang with John Lennon.
Can't complain about that.
No.
Okay, I don't have much more. I only have a couple more questions. I just have one more thing. So, a quote from the New York Times, December 8th, 1980. John Lennon, one of the four Beatles, was shot and killed last night while entering the apartment building where he lived, the Dakota, on Manhattan's Upper West Side. You said you were in Australia when you heard about it.
With my band, we arranged a memorial service, or a service in Melbourne at the cathedral, the exact time of his funeral in America, in New York. It was something I wanted to do. We all sang. It was one of those things that you could not believe what you were hearing. It was very, very alarming, very upsetting. And there was a lot of people in that church that God knows what time of day it was, at night or whatever, but we timed it that it would be exactly the same time as the funeral service in New York. It was something I'd never done for anybody else. I just felt it was the right thing to do. I didn't know, John wasn't particularly religious, but I just wanted to, and nor am I, but I just wanted to go into a church and sing the 23rd Psalm, pray for him, send our love to him. And it was so sad. God, I was overwhelmed with grief.
Did you speak to Yoko at that time?
Yeah. I mean, it was tough. I mean, what do you say? I mean, there's nothing you can say.
David was with her.
I know, and thank God.
David tells the story that, he tells the story that when he went to the hospital, first of all, he thought it was a crank call.
Right.
When they first called him up, he was at a hotel.
Right.
And they called him up and then they called back a minute later and it was a friend of Yoko's and said, get over here, you know.
Right.
And he went to the hospital, to Roosevelt Hospital, and they went in and the doctor came to him and said, you have to go in and tell her. To David.
Right.
And David said, I can't, you know, you have to do it.
Right.
He said, I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I don't know how what you would say, you know.
Mm. I think about it now, I just can't believe the shock when we were on the plane and told to stay there. And then the news, you couldn't comprehend it. I always thought, when I ever left, my grandmother was, you know, getting up in there. So I thought, every time I left home, I thought, oh, my grandma, I hope I'm going to see her again. And, you know, that was the last thing I thought. And, you know, we live in strange times. We still do. And, I've had a lot of people who I know murdered in their apartments, shot outside their home. Johnny Versace, that happened to me. He was my best friend. A friend of mine was murdered in his apartment in Monte Carlo. A friend of mine was battered to death in her apartment in New York. I lost Princess Diana in a car crash. It's been a very strange life I've had as far as losing people to violent circumstances. And you never, ever expect it and never can believe it.
I know that's a hard place to go, and I appreciate you saying it.
Thanks.
Very meaningful to the film and to Yoko. Yoko's a band tonight performing in Brooklyn Academy of Music.
I know, she's doing it with my friend the Scissor Sisters are doing it with her. So,
And your godson.
And Sean.
Yeah. Yeah, Sean's doing it too, yeah.
Emma saw them perform last night. She said Sean was amazing.
Yeah. What is it, Brooklyn Academy?
Yeah.
Did Jason and Anna do it last night?
Yeah,
great. Okay, good. Cool.
Yeah.
Good.
Did I cover it all?
Yep.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.